Fans, a pleasure to have you with us as we join Lincoln Mitchell. Lincoln is a native San Franciscan. He wrote a book called The Giants and Their City, Major League Baseball in San Francisco, 1976 to 1992. Let me tell you a little bit about Lincoln. He's been on our show before, a tremendous writer and a great researcher. He's been a Giants fan since the mid-1970s. He's a native of San Francisco. He is an adjunct research scholar at Columbia University's Arnold A. Salzman Institute of War and Peace Studies, and the author of five books, most recently San Francisco, Year Zero, Political Upheaval, Punk Rock, and a Third Place Baseball Team. Lincoln, a pleasure to have you with us. The book, The Giants and Their City, Major League Baseball in San Francisco, 1976 to 1992. And with all the stories of Giants baseball going back to the 1800s right up to today, this was one period of Giants history that will not be forgotten.
Well, I hope it won't be forgotten. Sometimes it feels like it has been forgotten. You know, this was kind of after Willie Mays, before Barry Bonds. This was a team that the closest they came to winning a World Series was the one pennant they won in this period when the earthquake was maybe the best thing that happened to the team on the field because they got swept so fast by the Oakland A's. So it's a very important in the development of the Giants, in them staying in San Francisco, building their identity, learning to do things right in the city. But it took some time, and this is a time in history that we should remember.
Well, we had Steve Treader on the show not too long ago, his story about Horace Stoneham. And 1976 is where you really start, but you give a good background of Horace Stoneham almost going bankrupt. The team almost going to Toronto, Bob Lurie, Bud Herseth getting together at the last minute, but there were political movements as well at that period of time to save the Giants for San Francisco and a very unlikely ally for the Giants.
Well, that's right. I mean, the news breaks in the Toronto papers and the San Francisco papers on, I want to say, January 8th of 1976. And the news is not rumors. The news is the Giants are going to Toronto. The Toronto papers are saying things like, well, the Giants will probably finish third in the National League West because Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are very good. And will we hire a new manager and fire Wes Westrom, et cetera, et cetera. George Moscone, after winning a razor-thin election victory over John Barbagelata, which was contested, for those of you that have been paying attention recently, Barbagelata sent people in to the Board of Elections to disrupt the recount when it was clear it wasn't going to overturn the outcome. That may ring a bell for people who've been watching in 2020. But Moscone had to say the Giants. You can't lose the baseball team your first week in office after winning a razor-thin margin of victory. And the first guy to step up is Lurie, but Lurie couldn't find anyone to come up. And Lurie bought the team. Ultimately, the team sold for $8 million. And I want you to think about it. Lurie came in for $4 million and couldn't raise $4 million more in San Francisco. And this is a guy who was very wired into the business community. Finally, Bud Herseth, kind of a kind of cowboy cattleman from Arizona who knew next to nothing about baseball, comes in with the other $4 million, and the Giants managed to stay in San Francisco. That's where the story begins, really.
Boy, it's an amazing story at that point. But Walter O'Malley becomes an ally because the Dodgers are on the West Coast, and they don't want to lose their partner in the San Francisco Giants.
That's right. O'Malley was an ally, but O'Malley was the most powerful National League owner and probably the most powerful owner in baseball by this time. For exactly that reason, the rivalry was really important. It was, you know, the Dodgers always knew that when they came to San Francisco, they would get a good audience, even when they were bad, which they weren't that often. The Giants always drew in L.A. And teams, you know, it made sense for O'Malley's view, the teams from, say, Pittsburgh or New York would come out and play a long stretch on the West Coast. He wanted the Giants, but he couldn't buy enough time. Ultimately, George Moscone, a liberal Democrat, takes Stoneham to court and gets a stay, buys some time, and the judge, John Benson, is also a San Francisco guy and implicitly also a Giants fan, but is a Ronald Reagan appointee. This is, of course, Governor Ronald Reagan, not President Reagan. But, you know, he's a liberal Democrat, an appointee by and joining forces with an appointee of Ronald Reagan on the political side. So it's quite a story of kind of political and the baseball.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned John Benson. I knew him as Jerry Benson, and he was a judge. He was an assistant district attorney, a very serious man, conservative man. And it's interesting how he saves the Giants. It gives them some time to pull it together. All right, so 1976, the Giants are saved. Bob Lurie, Bud Herseth have the club. But then the story gets interesting, the baseball side of the story. And really, 1978, was a tumultuous time in November of 78 when George Moscone and Harvey Milk were assassinated. But the 78 season put the Giants back on the map.
That's right. This is a team, and it's a little bit like the team today. Everybody was expecting the Dodgers and Reds back in 78 to fight it out for the NL pennant. Just like this year, we all heard that the Dodgers and the Padres were going to be fighting it out for the NL pennant, as if the world forgot there was a third team, a third National League team in California. And like this year, the Giants came out very strong. They were in first place for most of the summer and drawing huge crowds to Candlestick Park. This, of course, was the old days, Candlestick Park. More people came out to see that 78 team than any team up to that time in Giants history, except for 1960, which was the first year at Candlestick Park. And the key to that season was the huge trade for Vita Blue. Seven players, Mario Guerrero, Gary Thomas, and I'm not going to name them all for you, but I guess I could, Dave Heverlo, et cetera, for Vita Blue, who was one of the last great star of those A's teams that were still working for Charlie O'Finley. He wanted to get out of there. And when I spoke to Vita Blue for the book, he contrasted working for Finley and pitching for Bob Lurie. And let's just say that pitching for Bob Lurie was a much better experience for the great LaSalle-Paul. And he comes over, Jack Clark.
Go ahead. I was going to say, you can't forget the $350,000 that went to Charlie Finley, too.
That's right, but it was worth it. It was worth it to get Vita Blue. Jack Clark, Darrell Evans, Mike Ivey are kind of the hitting stars of that team. Bill Madluck, who moved over to second base. And, of course, Willie McCovey has a bit of an off year, but was the connection to the past and beginning to root the Giants in a longer history in San Francisco. He'd signed as a free agent before the 77 season after a brief sojourn with the Padres and the A's for a few weeks.
So here it is, 78. It's a great pennant race. The Giants falter towards the end of it. And then baseball kind of stagnates a little bit until we get to 82. And here comes Joe Morgan. It's kind of the last day of the season to sort of leave a good taste in everyone's mouth for 82. But it's Bob Lurie. Now he's a sole owner. Bud Herseth is gone. And now it's 1982. And here we are still at Candlestick.
That's right. And already by the early 80s, there are these stories every year in the offseason. You know, on the one hand, will the Giants trade for this person or sign that free agent once free agency takes root? But also, where are they going to play? You know, there's talk about doming Candlestick Park, which would have been a terrible and expensive idea. The constant struggle to find a new stadium. And in the middle of this, a veteran team in 82, contrasted with the younger team in 78, led by manager Frank Robinson, is still in the pennant race on the last weekend of the season. They get knocked out by the Dodgers on Friday night. And on Sunday, Joe Morgan hits a big three-run home run to put the Giants ahead and to knock the Dodgers out of the race. And the significance of that is that after they went to the playoffs in 71 and were back in 87, but for that interim years, this was a highlight, knocking the Dodgers out of the playoffs. And that was almost like getting into the playoffs ourselves. And I'd like to show that if you ever get a chance to watch the video on YouTube, it ends with a great shot of Tommy Lasorda, just with his head in his hand in despair, and no Giant fan. Any Giant fan will enjoy that.
Boy, it's a great book, honestly, a remembrance of what was going on during that period of time. As I say, starts in 76, it goes to 92. So much happened. The Giants and their city. Lincoln Mitchell is the author, Major League Baseball in San Francisco, 76 to 92. All right, so 82 ends, and now we go through sort of the barren period one more time, until the new general manager comes in.
That's right. And the Giants in 82, I won't go into too much depth because it was very depressing, but 83, 84, 85 are the worst years since before John McGraw was managing the New York Giants. You go back to the early, not very, very early part of the 20th century, and the team is just terrible. Veterans who have left their best years in another city, prospects who really aren't prospects. And in late 85, Lurie has had enough, fires the general manager, and he brings in Al Rosen, who he'd always wanted, he told me, he thought he was the right guy. Rosen is available. He comes in. Rosen fires the manager and brings in Roger Craig. And those two begin to turn the team around, not least with the attitude. Spring training of 86, or late 85, I think spring training of 86, they bring the team together and say, we're not complaining about Candlestick Park anymore. We're going to make this our biggest strength. Which, of course, it always could have been their biggest strength because visiting players hated coming to Candlestick Park. They bring a winning attitude, and two smart baseball minds. And they also, 1986, they have a rookie first baseman. They got no production out of first or second base in 84, 85. And in 86, opening day, Will Clark is in the lineup leading off and playing first base. And Will Clark is probably the best Giants player of this period. And Robbie Thompson is playing second. They open up in the Houston Astrodome, not known as a hitter's ballpark. And Will Clark leads off the season with a home run off Nolan Ryan. And that was a real statement. And from that point on, Giants have had some bad teams, but they've never been a laughing stock the way they were in the 83 to 85 or the kind of 75, 76 period. That really sets a tone, and it moves them in a much more positive direction.
Well, they make the playoffs in 87, a tough loss to the Cardinals for the pennant. 89, of course, they end up winning the pennant and go to the World Series, and now we've got the earthquake. But sort of along that way, Bob Lurie is still trying to get a new stadium and can't get it done, which is sort of what's going to happen over these next 3 years with Bob Lurie. So just touch on that briefly, because it's part of the history of this San Francisco ball club.
That's right, and there are really two intertwined strands here. One is trying to find a permanent home, but the second is the story of the team on the field. They go to the voters in 87 in San Francisco with an initiative to build a ballpark in the kind of Potrero Hill area. And it also coincides with the mayor's race, in which the kind of progressive Democrat, Art Agnos, isn't for the ballpark. He thinks it's the wrong location. It's kind of not where the progressive politics are. He wins, and with him brings down the ballpark initiative. So the ballpark loses. They don't get that. But now Agnos is the mayor, and he can't be the mayor who loses the Giants, so he wants the new ballpark. And in 89, they put a package together, and I don't know if you're familiar, for listeners who know the geography of San Francisco, they have the crazy idea of putting a ballpark essentially a third in King Street, which is exactly where the ballpark is now. So they have this idea. They talk about the home runs, the splash hits, all of that as they're kind of looking at this site. Again, they put it on the ballot. This time, of course, the Mayor Agnos is behind it and supporting it. But it was a very, very close election, and many people, including, you know, Bob Lurie and Cory Bush, who I talked about extensively for this book, both those guys, said, you know, we would have won if not for the earthquake, which really got people hesitant again. And they were, and the anti-ballpark people were able to make an argument, you know, we can't build a ballpark. We have to help people, even those different pools of money. Now, of course, we have no way of knowing if that's true, but certainly a lot of people around the Giants believe that. And after that, Lurie kind of throws up his hands and spends the next few years really, particularly after losing the World Series, the sense of, even though it's a very good team, it feels like the moment has gone, and he begins to explore moving down the peninsula. But that doesn't work out either, because the voters there reject the initiatives, and that's how you get to 92 when they're almost out the door to Tampa.
Well, we'll stop there. We know they're here, and we know Peter McGowan and a number of people, Larry Bear, put the coalition together to save the team, and then we know what happens after that. But the book is The Giants and Their City. Obviously, Lincoln has great passion for this period of time, and Lincoln, many books, you have to go back and just read newspaper clips. You did interview many, many people for this book, Art Agnos, Chief of Police Frank Jordan, who is mayor as well, Dianne Feinstein, John Montefusco, Will Clark, Kevin Mitchell, Mike Kruko, Dave Dravecki, and, of course, a very important person, Bob Lurie. So a great book. We, of course, support our independent bookstores up in Montclair. The Book Tree, I'm sure you could get it at all the different outlets. It's a Kent State University Press publication. But, Lincoln, this is a book for fans. You know, this is a while ago now, and you forget what baseball was like. You must have enjoyed doing this book.
Yes, it was a lot of fun doing it. I've never had the opportunity to do these kind of interviews of ball players. I've interviewed politicians for previous books, but talking to old baseball players is much more fun. So that was a real fun part of the book. And, you know, spending the kind of early days of the pandemic getting lost in newspapers and box scores from the late 70s and 1980s wasn't so bad either.
Well, if there was one moment or one thing you learned from doing this book very quickly, what would it be?
Well, one thing I learned is that after the earthquake, Faye Vincent wanted to move the final games of the World Series to San Diego. And the reason that didn't happen is because Bob Lurie, in a small private meeting, pounded his fist on the table. And I won't use the exact language he used because this is a family radio station. But let's just say made it clear to Faye Vincent that that was not a good idea and not the right thing to do for the fans of the San Francisco Giants or the people of San Francisco. And he made that point so strongly that Vincent backed down. That full anecdote with some of the more colorful language is in the book, but maybe this isn't the time to repeat all of that.
Okay. Well, I've said it a billion times. Bob Lurie should have a statue. Bob Lurie should have a spot. Horace Stoneham should have a spot at Oracle Park. These are very critical people in the survival of the Giants. So, Lincoln, I appreciate the book. It's excellent. Lincoln Mitchell, The Giants and Their City. I'm sure you could get it anywhere. So, Lincoln, thanks for coming on, and we'll chat with you again.
Thanks for having me. Always a lot of fun talking to you.
Oh, yeah. Very good. I enjoy it. All right. More coming up. KMBR 680-1045, the sports leader.